Okay, so just to begin by running through a little bit of the background, you can see your erstwhile team of authors represented here. I think you know all of us. In addition to the authors group, because it occurred to us that we might not quite know everything there is to know, we have assembled the following group of consultants. All people who are in this room representing various viewpoints and perspectives and fields of expertise where we felt we might need a little bit of popping up. And they include Luciana Durante, Brad Gleason, Cal Lee, Rob Maxwell, Doug Reeside, and Susan Thomas. And they will be working closely with us as we revise the report in terms of the timeline, just to sketch in a little bit of the background and where this particular project is, we first proposed the idea for the report and this meeting to Mellon in early 2009. They funded us in July of 2009. Since then, we have been researching and writing to prepare the draft that some of you have seen. The symposium in May 2010, and then the summer months ahead of us will be spent in revision. We hope to submit the draft to CLEAR by the end of August, and I think it will be only a couple of months once it's in their hands before it sees publication. So sometime in fall 2010, this should be available. It will be on the web as a PDF, freely available, and there may or may not be a print edition. I'm not sure of that. In terms of audience, we have a couple of different audiences who we were hoping to reach. I think certainly, first and foremost, archivists and cultural heritage professionals. That seems obvious. We also hope that at least some of what we write will be of interest to the professional and technical forensics community, not perhaps because we'll be telling them anything they don't already know about the field of computer forensics, but rather in terms of exposing them to new audiences for the tools and methodologies that they are developing. And I think we've already had some success with that, as reflected by some of the comments in the room yesterday. One particular audience that's particularly important to me, textual scholars and those who are really those scholars who are interested in the materiality of writing, inscription, and media. This is really my own academic background and training, and it's certainly the case that any scholar who is working on an author who began writing or who was writing from the 1980s on forward is going to be grappling with issues related to born digital media. Steve Innes was very eloquent on this point yesterday. And so I hope that the report finds an audience amongst scholars. And finally, funders are an audience for this work as well. In terms of purpose, I think we've already covered this. But once again, to introduce, for those who need such an introduction, computer forensics to the cultural heritage community, to identify points of convergence between computer forensics and the needs and interests of cultural heritage, and to create the basis for further contact and collaboration. I think the closing session this morning will be particularly important on this last point, because I think many of us want to ensure that there are steps forward beyond the report in this meeting for helping to ensure more regular channels of communication between the different constituencies we have represented here. The table of contents, and I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but just to give you a sense of what we've covered, we've broken this out into four main sections, the sorts of introductory material that you would expect, a sort of longish middle section on challenges that includes things like legacy materials and trustworthiness and documentation and data recovery, as well as, I think, importantly, costing forensic work. A section on ethics, the heading for which appears to be truncated in the slide, but that's what you find at the top of the right-hand column. Ethics is a particularly, I think, important dimension of this material. I think it's one way in which the interests of archivists, scholars, cultural heritage professionals differ or diverge from the legal forensics community. And you'll be hearing more about that in a few moments. Finally, conclusions and recommendations. And really, as a sort of fifth section to the report, a fairly extensive set of appendices that surveys forensics hardware and software. Rachel Donahue has prepared those, as well as a references section. So we actually think if we do nothing else, in the body of the report, we hope that at least the data gathering that we've accomplished in the appendices will prove to have some value. So moving into some of the sort of background and assumptions behind what we're doing, the challenge of foreign digital materials, I don't think I need to make the case to this room, although I remain struck by the extent to which colleagues and scholars who don't have any particular interest or expertise with regard to computers and electronic media, the extent to which there's still, I think, a kind of blind spot with regard to the way in which scholarship is going to be changing as a result of the advent of foreign digital material. Certainly scholarship in the humanities, but as we heard yesterday from Leah Scanlon, anybody who is interested in government records, anybody who is interested in data from all different segments of society. A number of people, some of them in this room, and a number of projects have taken really crucial foundational steps towards addressing this issue already. The Interpares project since 1999 under the Chiana Durante's direction in three separate phases. I'm not going to talk through Interpares, as I know most people in the room are familiar with it. Also, Seamus Ross and Anne Gow's work on digital archaeology, I think also dating from 1999. So certainly conversations have been underway for well over a decade. A little bit more recently, the paradigm work at the Bodleian, as well as the ongoing Future Arc project, as we heard yesterday from Susan Thomas, Future Arc in particular, is engaging deeply with forensic methodology. The Digital Lives project at the British Library under Jeremy's direction, and if you haven't seen what I can only refer to as the magisterial final report from Digital Lives. It's something that you absolutely all need to look at. It's very rich. And finally, a project that Gabby, myself, Erica Farr, Naomi Nelson, Harry Krause, Doug Reeside, all undertook, and Catherine Stoller-Peters, with a covering, I think, some of the same emphases as the Digital Lives work, but paying particular attention to literary materials and approaches to managing and collecting foreign digital literary materials. So all of these we regard as predecessor projects that inform our current work. In terms of some of the deeper some of the deeper background and intellectual assumptions. Don McKenzie, who we've written about a little bit in the introductory section, he is really there as a kind of stand-in for the entire field of textual scholarship, which has been deeply concerned with the materiality of printed documents. Again, this is really my own scholarly training. And for those of you who are perhaps wondering how a mild-mannered English professor found his way to the field of computer forensics, it comes out of my engagement with print materials and with a tradition of thinking that is deeply invested in understanding the materiality of paper, applying that same kind of thought process to born digital materials. So this is certainly the tradition represented by McKenzie. It's one of the key foundations for the report. Diplomatics is certainly another. And we heard Luciana speak to this yesterday. Forensic science, of course. We position computer forensics as originating within the tradition of forensic science known as trace evidence, which was pioneered by a French scientist, Edmond Lacard, who in the 19th century worked on things like clothing fibers and hairs and, you know, really the stuff of CSI and sort of television forensic drama. But pioneering the field that's become known as trace evidence, with associated maxims such as every contact leaves a trace, meaning that in the physical material world which we all inhabit, there is always a kind of exchange or transfer of evidence when two different entities come into contact with one another. And we certainly see this in the electronic world as well, when we become reminded that even data, seemingly so abstract and symbolic, you know, the zeros and the ones, it actually does have physical materiality in the form of the residue that one finds on magnetic disks, for example. And so the Department of Defense official recommendation, if you truly want to sanitize your data, is to destroy it, disintegrate it, or melt it, or perhaps to shred it, as that's actually a shredded hard drive that you see on the slide there. I'm not going to linger over this particular slide, except to say that the emphasis of the report is firmly on file system forensics as opposed to some of the other branches of computer forensics. We do have some interest in the report in both web forensics and mobile forensics, since those are clearly going to be of ever-increasing importance to cultural heritage. Just a slide to reiterate the point that it seems important to us to understand that when we talk about computer forensics, we're really talking about the interplay between physical and logical systems. So in the background there is a magnetic force microscopy image of bits on the surface of a hard drive, that physical trace evidence, the residue, which I mentioned a moment ago. In the foreground, we have code. The point is that an archivist or somebody else who is working with born digital materials really needs a working knowledge of both the characteristics and properties of physical storage media, as well as the operations of particular file systems. This I love. This is an art installation. But it's to make the point that we also, in the report, very much conceive of a computer as a space or a place. Brian Carrier, whose work some of you will know, has written at some length about the idea of treating a computer as a physical crime scene. And I think what's important about that to us is that it does capture the sense of the computer not just as a kind of repository for data or records, but as a place, as an environment. And I think if you think about that with regard to your own computers, you understand that. We personalize our computers, we inhabit them, they become a kind of reflecting pool for ourselves and our notions of self-identity. So understanding the computer as a kind of as a space for exploration is another important aspect of our work. The stakeholders that we perceive primarily are these three, the donors, archivists, and patrons. And I think we were particularly concerned with the interplay and interactions amongst those three. I think it's important, this came out a little bit in the discussion yesterday, but I think another difference between some of the work that one sees in industry or government research with regard to forensics and perhaps the interest of this community is the importance of vintage computing and vintage computer forensics. I think sometimes in the marketplace we see a kind of rush to be the first to publish, for instance, the forensics handbook to the iPad. And in the case of cultural heritage, it's just as often the case that it's older hardware that we'll be interested in. My favorite example of this is Stephen King, who is actually one of the earliest literary adopters of word processing I know of, and he began working on a Wang word processor back around 1981. Access, how will the results, the outcomes of forensic exploration be shared with a user community? And we had some discussion yesterday about, for example, emulation, and about the extent to which disk images are appropriate to share with patrons, or is it the archivist's function to redact the disk image? That issues of access are particularly important to us. And finally, as already mentioned, issues regarding ethics. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Gabby.